You know, the genius of the Gospel of Luke is that he packs too many things in a very short space. Like Paul, if you really want to know how to pack things in short space, precise statements, read Galatians. It is the most difficult piece of literature ever written. And people have written massive of books and very often miss the point. You know how one statement takes you from the North Pole to the South Pole. So, what we have here in chapter 9, I kept saying, is getting too long, you know. When that's going to end, you know, to move on. Anyway, our Lord was on his way to Jerusalem. So he decided to pass through Samaria. The Samaritans are very strange people. There's a historical note in the handout about their origin. Very obscure. Could be of a mixed marriage between Jews and Assyrians. Built a temple on Mount Gerizim, destroyed by the Maccabees when Alexander the Great invaded Palestine, took it over. But then they revived again. And to my surprise, they rewrote the 5 books of Moses.
The Samaritans did?
Yeah, there's the Samaritan Torah, which I didn't want to put that here because I have it, I read it. And you know, it's not original because, you know, if you are a teacher, it's very funny. If you are a teacher and you have 2 papers, and one of them has been cheating. When you compare the 2 papers, then you know which one has been cheating. Always the extended text always cannot be the original. So they took the text of the Jews and extended and added something to it. It maintained the original text, but added something to make it, in their own fancy ideas, more clear. So, when that came to exist, we don't know. Very obscure people. I followed their history, and I know that they are now in Israel, in Naples, on the West Bank. And if you, they encourage people because the number of men has been in total decline. So they pay about $10,000 for any man to go and to marry a Samaritan woman. It's a very good deal. Have a free house. And there's Israeli passport. Whether there's a job for, you know, being, other than being a husband, I don't know. Very unusual people. But Christ has to go through there. And the dislike between the two has grown so much that they refuse to speak to each other. It's actually more hard than as it was here in this country between the black and the white. I mean, certain areas. Not every white person was necessarily a racist. Not every black person was necessarily a racist. But, you know, there is that sense of, I just don't like you because you are a Samaritan. And I don't like you because you are a Jew. It's on both sides. So they refused to let him pass through and stay with them. And then, you know, out of the 12 apostles, 2 came and said to Christ, why don't you send fire from heaven to consume these people? To prove that you are the Messiah. See? The show off. So show off is the work of the devil. And sometimes God will do something in His great wisdom to bring someone to the real faith. But here Christ, you know, didn't want to say this, but rebuke them. Christ didn't come to destroy, but to heal. If you reject Him, He will still go after you. So, read the note, you know, on the Samaritan. I don't want to waste time on it, because we have other important things. And then after that episode, in the same chapter, immediately, three people want to become followers of Jesus. The first one comes and said to Him, you know, I want to follow you. Wherever you will go. And Christ said, foxes have holes, and the birds of the sky have nets, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay His head. You know, this is very revealing answer, that Christ did not come to stay in a place. And please note the background. A rabbi will open a school in a locality, like, say, East 91st would become a synagogue on East 91st Street. And in that locality, people come to Him. But you see, Christ behaves against the rabbinic behavior. He goes to people. He does not wait for people to come to Him. He goes to them. If that says anything, it says about His extreme love for humanity. The rabbis will open the school. People come, brings gift and money and food and everything. And He sits on His chair and teach. People take notes and it's fine. It's a lovely job. But Christ does not have a place of dwelling. And He compares Himself to the foxes, to the birds. And I have no place to dwell in. When you say nowhere to lay His head, means accommodation. You want to follow Me? Well, come with Me and be a seeker of other people. Learn from Me. And then the second one, funny. Let Me first go and bury My father. I have scanned over 100 commentaries on that. It was very disturbing. Because Christ said to him, leave the dead to bury their own dead, but you go and preach the kingdom of God. You know, people raised hell about saying, leave the dead. Because you see, in Judaism, proper Judaism, it is your duty to bury your father and your mother. Stated in black and white in the Jewish law. And people said, oh yes, why is Jesus so harsh? Okay. Well, I put some suggestions to you. If you look on page 3, people looked at the Aramaic background of the saying and said the dead actually are the people who carry the casket. That is quite possible in Aramaic. Put the Aramaic word for you. The metim, you know, in Bob Walters put it in black. So we're just saying, you know, let those who carry the casket bury the dead. You know? So those who carry the dead, let them carry the dead, but you come and follow Me. Possible. But I think, you know, it's also possible that to see that the dead who are spiritually dead, and you are alive seeking the kingdom. But is that really the only harsh saying of Jesus? Are there any harsh sayings in Jesus to start with? You know, I keep saying, is any Christ really harsh? And the answer is no. Because here on sea, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. What do you think? And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. More harsh, if you don't forgive your heavenly father, not forgive. What do you think? Are these harsh things? I don't think so. I ask it, Philemon. Whenever there is something harsh, I go to the source. We need a good reader. Thank you for being so kind.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So right here.
Yes.
At the very beginning of my journey with beloved Jesus, I was troubled by some of his words, such as, he who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. I lived with these words, repeating them for many days, meditating on their goal, rather on their outward look.
You see, look at the goal. What do you really want to say? Okay.
My Savior does not want a split love or divided love, where more love is on one side and less on the other side. That's good. True love does not choose what is higher and what is lower. There is one love that comes for God the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, and this love is shed abroad in our heart by the Holy Spirit. I pause on the words, worthy of me, for it is about a full union like that of husband and wife in Ephesians. We are worthy of Jesus if we seek him with our weak and divided life and ask Jesus to heal us and to make us whole.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. You know, we were talking at lunchtime to a young man has been married for 15 years, working in a bank, fell in love with his secretary, decided to leave his wife, divorce her, and marry the secretary. I don't know, when, I won't call it love, I will call it infatuation and lust, captured the human mind, there is no room for any rational argument. Forget it. And there's no way of using, you know, be a faithful husband, you know, 15 years of marriage. All this is just like a smoke. So while we were talking and hearing the story, and suddenly, you know, all the bad things, the wife wasn't there. So we always say, when you hear one side, be sure it's not the full story. The wife was not there. He piled huge things. And I was praying, Lord, tell me a word of truth about this man, because I know any argument is not going to. I said to him, you know, okay, your secretary is married? And he said, no. And I said, she has a child. How do you know? Well, the Lord spoke to me, actually. How do you know? I said, well, I just know. If I said the Lord told me, he will not believe me. And I said, and I think of the third man in her life. Really? I said, yes. How do you know? I said, well, Christ told me. And if I'm wrong, I have to repent, but I'm not wrong. I know the voice of truth that comes from the Lord. She, you are the third man, and there will be a force after you. So sacrifice your marriage for her, and the problem is, it's a divided love. Suddenly, 15 years is the old lady who is useless. A lower love. And the new love is the greatest dream of, this is onwards, the greatest dream of his life. The love of my life. And I said, that's Hollywood stuff. Made him an omelette, refused to eat it. Was very upset. Became very angry with me, actually. And I said to him, no, look, brother. I have seen that in the clinic at least twice a week. At least twice a week. There was 1 week when every day you had a case like this. And I kept saying, my goodness, when the devil ever will get a holiday, you know, and leave us alone. You know, every day, 1 week, from Monday to Friday, every day there is something like that. Sometimes it's a man, sometimes it's a woman, but more often it's a man. And I said, okay, I'll eat your omelette, you know, don't worry. The sad thing is, a divided love is the hole that can actually make a whole ship sink down to the bottom of the sea.
A hole that will make a whole ship sink down to the sea?
Absolutely. I don't know if I used to row on the River Cam in Cambridge. You take a canoe, take a boat, you know, because it's so lovely. And you know, one day we really had a hole in the boat. We didn't notice till we started, because when it was floating on the surface of the river, we didn't know. There was some water, but you know. But when two people went with the weight, it started to fill in. They had to come out very quickly. And you know, and drag it back to the owner and said, give us another one because there's a hole in it. Because you know for sure that within 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you're going to swim. You're going to swim. And you're going to lose the boat. A divided love is like that. I have seen a woman came to our clinic. She loves her dog more than her children. Why? Because the dog is obedient. Of course, there's no will. I love Sammy. Sammy is the dog. I love Sammy. And I kept, Sammy? Oh, who is Sammy? You don't know Sammy? I'll bring her next week. I said, but who is she? It tend to be, these little tiny dogs, Chihuahua dog, you know? And she carries the dog in her purse, you know, and sleeps with her in bed, you know, and she prepares the dog to her children. And I said, yes, because the dog obviously doesn't object, doesn't have a dialogue, does not drive the car, does not ask for money, you know, of course. But that's actually one-sided love. You know, she loved the dog actually more than her husband. And I kept saying, well, I'm really worried about you. Because a divided love is the shortest way to hell. Do you remember the Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis?
The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis. Oh,
yeah. Have you read that? One element in that is people who are living in the hereafter, all of them suffer from a divided self. A divided love.
That's the one where they have an opportunity to leave hell and go to heaven. Oh. I mean, that's kind of the main, that's what the guy's talking about. And then it's, how they can't. It's like, well, yeah, but I'd have to give up this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's one of his main, like, when you buy a group of six C.S. Lewis books, that one, Mere Christianity, and Screwtape Letters.
It's, you know, it's sickness. Because, you see, we become so attached to things. Things that actually we master. I was thrilled when in the Bible study this morning was talk about the Zimzum in Judaism. Zimzum is a Hebrew word, means I leave a space for you. That when God created us, He withdrew Himself to give you a space. It's called Zimzum in Hebrew. And then they told me that Rob Bell wrote a book with his wife that marriage is a Zimzum.
I've read it.
Is it good?
Who wrote it?
Rob Bell.
Is it good?
Of love. Yes, I thought it was good. And
I was thrilled because that's actually deeply rooted in Jewish literature, which is not very well known among Christians. Yes?
About giving each other space, yep, in the marriage to thrive as individuals, but to strengthen the bond, you know, where you're each taking turns and allowing your mate to,
yep,
craft her identity and to,
yeah,
express herself, and then you embrace that and not chastise her,
huh?
And she does the same in return.
Yep.
And then the theory of that's really a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you know, I was overjoyed because the idea of God creating you to draw His presence to give you a space is utterly unknown to Christians, and now it is used even in marriage, because you see, our tyranny comes from our narcissism. I want you to be a copy of me, which is self-love. It's not loving the other. And here is the issue. Why the apostles want to destroy the Samaritans? Because they refused Christ. Why? Send fire to consume them? So what is the end result? They accepted anything? No. They just perished. So there is that sense of extreme self-love and narcissism, and I don't want to allow you to be what you are because I fill the space. And you have to be exactly what I want. But if you become what I want, it's self-love. There's no place for the other. And that's a major issue in any human relationship. Even in the university, you dare to disagree with one of the big names.
Same way with business too.
Oh, I haven't worked in business, but I believe it.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it very much, because you see, if in when you see someone really successful and doing very well, suddenly becomes the center of envy. Well, let him. What's the problem? You know, Philemon used to say to me, there's 185 degrees. You take 45 degree and leave the rest to the others. And I like that. Well, you see, can you really cover the whole area? No. Let the people be what they like to be. And here is, the whole issue is, I love my father, I love my mother, and Christ is number two. You know, there's a big book written by a Quaker long time ago, I don't remember the name, called Christ is My Second Choice. Christ is the Need. People come to Christ because they need Christ. And He's number two, not number one. And that is a major issue in our religious life. You quarrel with people in the church over minor issues. Why? Let them do what they like to do. If you think that you have... number three, which I like. Let me say goodbye to my people at home. And the answer is very sharp. No man, having put his hand on a plow and keep looking back, is fit for the kingdom. Again, the divided attention. You know, I think farmers will know that. If you really do that, then you never get a straight line. It is a divided attention. Christ wanted us wholeheartedly to be focused. And out of that focus, I love my father and my mother. Yes, Your Majesty.
I don't really remember what book or verse. I'm sure someone else probably will. But it talks about if you, in your marriage, you accept Christ, but your spouse does not, that you should not leave the marriage. But
that's Corinthians chapter 7. That's Corinthians chapter 7.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's a little bit in... It's going to be divided, I would think, to some degree, because as a believer, so it kind of would not conflict, but
yep.
That's a tough situation to...
It is tough, but you know, I have known in my own heart and in reality, Christians married Muslim girls. Christians married a Muslim girl, actually, several cases, mixed marriage. And in the due course, the girl became a Christian. You know? At the very beginning, you know, when they came to see the bishop, not me, because I cannot do it. I cannot do such a wedding. They will lynch me, definitely. So I went to the bishop, and the bishop said, okay, we'll marry in the church. Does she accept that? And she said, yes. Hey, it was a big jubilee. And I watched the from a distance. I know a Muslim married a Christian girl. And he allowed the girl, the boys and the children to go to a Catholic school. And they were brought up as Christians. Even, you know, used to go to the church with their mom. And on the last leg of his life, he became a Christian. You know, it's a sacrificial love. And need a well-disciplined person. Not any human being can do it. But you know, if there is a real love and there is a sacrificial love, it can happen. But Paul says, you know, if the other wants to stay, let him stay. Because the Lord called us in peace. But if they want to leave, let them leave. It's a highly debatable chapter, by the way. And don't read, you better read it in several translations because the English veil some of the technical vocabulary. But because you see, today in modern life, well, I have seen a lot of marriages that did not work among Christians. Mm-hmm. Members of a church, actually. And very active members of the church. And it's not the problem of the marriage.
Well, the divorce rate amongst Christians is pretty comparable to between.
Do you know the rate? Do you know the rate in England now?
No.
It is 9 out of 10 marriages.
Are you serious? Wow.
Yes, sadly.
Oh wow! It's almost that here.
Hmm?
It's almost that. I mean.
I don't know about.
You're very close in America.
I don't know about America because I get something called the British Medical Association report, a yearly one, and they tell us what's happening in the country. And that was last year. I was horrified. 9 out of 10 is too much. And the reasons, there's a big chapter on divorce. The reason is the shocking. They say, that's the British Medical Association, if your marriage survived for 10 years, it may survive another 10 years. That is because, you know, in the consumer society, we are developing in our own life how to change things as we change cars and TVs and furniture and homes. We change wives and husbands. I don't know. I am too old to think about the things. I'm glad I will never live in that culture anymore. You know, sometimes I speak to young people, I don't understand what they talk about. There is such a gap. Generation gap, yes. What's happening to us today is that the society has managed to intrude into our inner life and to reshape our inner life in a way that becomes alien to Christ. Intrusion. You know what I mean by intrusion? Okay? The values that we have in our heads today are not the value of Jesus. The attitude and the vision are not necessarily Christian. And we are not aware because they are commonly accepted. I had a Volkswagen car, Beetle, that was running in the streets of Cairo for 25 years. Are you going to change your car? I said, no. Why? The old dog is still running very well. Why change my car? Have a better car. Why? Why have a better car? You know, it is that sense of changing. Sad. In it. Page 4. Page 4 is the sending of the 70. Yes?
George, before you go into that, can I ask you a question about this trip we're taking through Samaria? Is this the second trip?
It's very hard to tell. Because, you see, we know from historians that people going to Jerusalem can make a long tour to avoid Samaria. And people who don't worry about Samaria can go to Samaria. So did Jesus go to Samaria twice? Possible. Did he go? Because in Luke, it's only one trip. In John, it could have been the same trip, the one when he met the Samaritan woman. It's not very easy to answer the question. Not very easy at all. There's a book written by an old Nick called The Travels of Jesus in Palestine. And he tried to make a map. What did Jesus actually saw? When he came to the last year of the traveling, then you have to put your hand up and say, I can't map it anymore. But it is possible it's two visits. The one to Tyre and Sidon, you know, which is completely outside Judea, has caused a row in the community around Jesus because they were Phoenicians. You remember the woman that came asking Christ to save her daughter? And do you remember the answer? The answer Christ said to the woman, it's not good to take the bread of the children and to throw it to
the dogs.
Who are the dogs, you think? The Phoenicians. And that is in the mind of the apostles. So he said that in order to say to the apostles, I know what you are thinking about. And the woman said, well, dogs can eat, you know, the crumbs that comes out of the table. And he said, great is your face, woman. You know, there are certain things in the life of Christ that utterly shocking. That Phoenician thing, you know, I read it and I kept saying, what makes you make that tour out there? Because here in the note, when he sent the 70, he says to them, you know, if you go to a house and they don't accept you, take off your sandals and shake the dust.
Yeah.
And shaking the dust is a very simple practice among all Jews. Because if they leave the land of Israel and go to the land of Canaanites, they pick up the dust from the streets. Yeah. And that dust is the Assyrians and the Canaanites dig the graves and take the ashes to fertilize the fields. And anything related to death is defilement. So they bring defilement to the land of Israel. So before you enter the land of Israel, take off your shoes and shake the dust off. Don't bring the defilement to our land. You see? My goodness. When the Jews are very extremely careful about purity and defilement, it drives me crazy. It's like, you know, in the Passover, when with a candle, they look for a little tiny piece of bread. It's supposed to make you very precise, but sometimes it becomes fanaticism. And you know what Christ is saying? If they don't accept you, well then, shake your dust off, but shaking the dust outside their house, saying that you are no longer Jews. Because you're supposed to take the kingdom into your own heart. It is a very disturbing behavior. You know that Christ we see in the Hollywood stuff, very nice, very calm. No, he's very sharp sometimes. And I think in our culture, we try to be extremely meek. We lose our sharpness. I have seen in the Gospels, in the four Gospels, the sharp side of Jesus, extremely clear, against the background. And you keep saying, you are not really that extreme, weak character. You're so strong. Because one element that disturbs us, we are disturbed, but it does not disturb Jesus. No neutrality between good and evil. Good is good, evil is evil, nothing in between. God is God, the devil is the devil, nothing in between. We try to play it clever, right? To be, you know, what you call in America today, politically correct. You can't. Nobody can, actually. Simply because you can be neutral about certain things, but good and evil, no. So, send the 70 and say, peace be to this house. Shalom. And shalom is not just peace. It means wholeness and actually a lot of good things. And you know, if the house accepts you, they have peace. If not, it's funny, your peace will come back to you. Which means, you know, worry not. I was talking to someone just an hour ago, and she has been shot at by every member of her church. You know, when someone in ministry, or people just, you know, don't like it. And I said to her, you know, have peace. If there is a problem in your ministry, say to Christ, I'm sorry, it is your problem, Lord. It's no longer mine. Very hard. It requires a discipline. Your peace will come back to you means you are okay. Worry not about criticism. Here's a story from, remember Mullah Nasruddin? Remember Nasruddin?
Nasruddin, who you've mentioned the last couple of weeks.
I love the man. Whenever I hear bad news, I go to, I have the book in English and in Persian. And just an open at random, just for fun. He was traveling with his boy, and he had one donkey. So he said to his son, it's a long distance, you know, sit on the donkey, you know. And met some people said, look at that boy, who had no mercy on his dad. He is riding the donkey, and his poor old dad is walking. He said to his son, come down, son, I'll ride the donkey. And you can walk. Met other people on the road and said, look at this old man. He has no pity on his son. Look at this poor old boy. And this old man is riding a donkey and the boy is walking. So he said to him, you know, well, maybe both of us had to ride the donkey. So they actually sat on the donkey. Many other people said, look at these people have no mercy. Both of them are riding the donkey. And then Nasruddin said, we tried every way. There's one way left. Let us carry the donkey. When I was a chaplain in Cambridge, I asked an English student to make a cartoon of the story. I was criticized every day. Every day. By students and by the staff. Why did you use that hymn? Why this prayer? You know, every day is a criticism. So I really said, and only one way is to use humor. So I get a student, you know, and I have made lovely cartoons of the donkey and Nasruddin's son. And I said, you know, good morning, brothers and sisters. Before we read and go to prayer, I want to tell you a story. And the story appeared. The humming and the joy and the... And actually, that story reduced the criticism. Because, you know, we hang the cartoons on the door of the chapel. Yes. Because, you know, you cannot satisfy the demands of everybody. Can't be. Every human being has his own will or her own imagination about something. You can't. So don't waste your energy. You like the story, Bob?
Yes.
I like the story. If you can imagine, you know, a man and his son carrying a donkey, entering the city, carrying the donkey. Oh, and when they enter the city, carrying the donkey, they said, look at these mad people. And instead of riding the donkey is riding them. So, you know, you try every means to please people, you're wasting your life and your energy, and at the end you have to catch the donkey. So, peace will come back to you. If you have the peace in your own heart and you have a message, okay. You are wrong, okay, I am wrong.
It would seem our culture is kind of carrying the donkey these days. Yeah.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You could say that.
No, they're carrying the donkey, and the donkey's just walking, and they're walking alongside.
Look at these two. No, they said, look at these two, they're having a donkey and not riding the donkey. It's whatever behavior you do is criticized.
That's right.
And they said, boy, we tried everything. There's one thing left. Let's catch the donkey. You know, I like Nasruddin. Because, you know, another story is the same line. I like him. They wanted him to come to preach in a mosque. And the mosque was flooded with people. And he did not prepare a sermon and wanted just to slip out. And he said, do you know what I'm going to talk to you about? And he said, no. And they said, okay, if you don't know, it's a waste of time. And he left. And they called Mother Tamar, and people came from the whole city and said, do you know what I'm going to talk about? He said, yes, we know. Okay. If you know, why should I repeat it? And he... And they said, next time we'll confuse him. Half the mosque will say yes, and half will say no. And then he has to speak. He asked the servant, said, do you know what I'm going to talk about? No. Other side said yes. Okay, those who know can tell those who don't know. And left. Well, you know, it is for fun, truly, but it is the psychology of human nature. Because the simple fact is this: no one can ever. There are plenty of stories in Nasruddin about human psychology. No one ever can meet the demands of other people. In the Talmud, they say, God is a soldier, is a father, and a mother, and a protector, and a farmer. But there is one job God never took. And you know, what is it? Never a chef. Because whatever food he will provide, nobody will eat it. And you know, look, you go to a restaurant, have the menu, right? Mm-hmm. Out of what? I counted once, some people took us to the most expensive steak place in Indianapolis. The truth is, I couldn't understand anything. Written in Italian. Okay. And I kept saying, well, what is that? I said, this is meat. And I said, what is it? Oh, it's cooked in a special way. Ah. You know, I'm a very simple man. And then the host said, okay, what about you? I said, I don't know. What are these? And I said to the gentleman who came to serve us, the story of the Talmud, God refused to be a chef. And he said, really? I said, yes, because look, here is evidence. Well, my dear sir, why don't you cut a small piece of each? I wasn't very serious. And just bring it on a plate. And he said, do you know how many are these? I said, no. Do you know how many? I said, no. I said, sir, these are 26 different ways of cooking a steak. What a waste of time. I ended by asking my wife to choose for me. Resign my responsibility. Because you see, honestly, I am trying to save you from hassle. If you try to meet the demands of other people, you're actually digging a big pit for yourself. Forget it. And if you think this is love, it's not love. It is surrendering your freedom of choice to other people. Be yourself. If you don't like it, don't like you. What's the big deal? You don't like me for that, you may like something else. Oh, as Nasruddin said, you don't like me today, tomorrow you change your mind.
It's really hard to convince high school kids of what you're saying right now, because that's such a problem with high school kids.
You're telling me? I know for sure. And you know, to be a teacher in a school requires divine wisdom. My goodness, I bow down to every school teacher, believe me. You know why? Because I was once a school teacher. And I keep saying, my goodness, what a misery I have put on myself. So, what is the big deal? And you know, Christ said, preach the kingdom. They don't accept you, shake your sandals. He didn't say, stand, argue with them. Because sometimes, you know, okay, I argue the Jehovah's Witnesses over 12 years. Did I succeed to convert anyone? The answer is no. Just out of my own ego, I think. Okay. We have to leave page 5 and go to page 6. Hmm? What?
We're going to be
skipping. We're skipping. We're leaving.
Okay. Young lady, you're supposed to read that at home.
Okay. I will. Will you have coffee or tea?
I will.
Or a glass of whiskey.
She's Irish. I'm Irish. I might have some punchy.
You know, the simple fact is, I'll tell you something. I really dislike reading my own hand notes. I like to communicate with you. Sitting and you look at your bright eyes and your beautiful faces is better than staring at a piece of paper. Because I really hope that people read that. Because you see, let me tell you, this handout will take at least 2 days of my life to prepare. Because I really trouble myself, because I really want to present you with the best New Testament studies. The best. Now, this again, you know, Christ started to speak wars against the towns of Galilee. You know. And he says, you know, Capernaum. And you know, Bethsaida and Chorazin. You said Chorazin? Is it Chorazin or Chorazin?
Well, most of us, starting with me, have never heard, I mean, other than what's in the Bible, I don't have a reference for where it is except this one reference. So I don't know where it is.
Okay. He says, you know, now we know from archaeology that Capernaum does not exist anymore. Perished. So, what is the big deal here? Let me summarize the Bible for you. Why are you staring at me? Sodom and Gomorrah and cities are not destroyed instantly. The Bible tells us 3 things about a city. And if you really read the Bible carefully, you'll notice yourself that a destruction of cities and even nations takes a long time. Why? Number one, evil is like fire. It consumes itself. Have you ever seen fire? Fire cannot stay all the time burning. Once the wood or the coal finished, the fire dies. Evil consumes itself. So when there is a nation on the course of evil, it brings destruction to itself. I don't know if you have done any history in the secondary school of the reason for the First World War and the Second World War. There was a lot of rejection of power in Europe. You know, a big chunk of land called the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. Okay? Which Serbia was part, now is Yugoslavia. And the rise of the Nazis. Evil destroys itself because it consumes itself. It likes to spread. And when there's no more wood, it starts to eat itself. There's a common saying in in our historical books, it says, you know, all revolutions devour its own children.
All revolutions devour its own children.
Yes. That's actually by the greatest British historian. And you know, the Nazis and Lenin, Stalin wiped out all the people that were on the Central Committee. Any revolution, fight for power. They kill. Killing, and then at the end, they collapse. Because there is no one to say the truth. There was a story. You remember Franco in Spain?
Francisco Franco in Spain.
Yeah, Franco. When he died, it's a common saying in Spain, he died. And the guard was saying, my goodness, who has the courage to tell him that he died? So afraid of him. And you couldn't tell the people that Stalin was dead. They're afraid to say, you know, the tyranny was so huge. But where is Stalin now? They took him out of the Kremlin and buried him in a unknown grave. While people used to, when I was in Moscow, the line to see Stalin and Lenin, I went under communism, was at least a mile long. And I kept saying, my God, why should I stay in the line? And we can't stand and take pictures. The guard will shout at you. I said, I'll go and have a look at the devil, you know. I don't mind to look at the face of the devil. Because you see, evil consumes itself. All these cities will grow up. They're in the Talmud and in Midrash Rabbah. What happened at the Tower of Babylon?
Tower of Babylon.
Yeah. According to the Jewish tradition, people who spoke the same language. Absolutely. But each one had a different intention. So the meaning of a word has multiplied because they were slaves and masters. And when the slaves and masters use the same word, the word would mean different meaning. So this agreed could not complete the project. It's the same language, you know. Not necessarily a different language. It's the same language, but the masters speak in a way, and the slaves understand differently, and the slaves speak another way. It was done by slaves and masters. It was bound to come to an end. Why civilizations die? Because it has tyranny, fear, and enslavement.
Tyranny, fear, and enslavement.
Yeah. There's a lovely story in the in the Persian collection of a tyrant who abolished the word freedom. No one's allowed to use the word freedom. Being deleted from the books, from dictionaries, from speech, and generations grow up not knowing that this word does exist. You expect that things will go fine. But it says, you know, but people start to disagree with themselves. It's natural. And they kept saying, what shall we call the disagreement? Because, you know, and then an old man who lived under the old regime said, there was another word that we have not been using for such a long time. It's called free to disagree. And the word freedom came back. Because you see, evil destroys itself. Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed themselves. And just the Lord gave them time and it didn't work. Let creation run its course. Number two, that the relationship in the among the inhabitants are not really a relationship of cooperation. Do you remember a saying by our Lord Himself? When the Jews said, by the power of Baal-Zebul, you couldn't Baal-Zebul?
Beelzebul.
Okay, whatever. I say it in Hebrew. You cast out demons. What did He say? A house that is divided cannot
stand.
Why? Why a divided house cannot stand?
How can Satan cast out Satan? Don't they say that?
Yeah, but why a house is divided cannot stand? A story from Nasr al-Din again. I'm going to do to you. Nasr al-Din opened a shop to sell flour. Flour to make bread. And he married a woman who was a little bit mentally. And when the people said, you know, oh, you know, put more flour, you know. And Nasr al-Din realized that every amount of flour is sold is really very heavy. He discovered that the woman puts her own gold in the flour to make it tip it down, you know. And he said, why are you doing this? And he said, to satisfy the people who wanted something heavy to carry. And he said, yes. I work from outside to build up our treasure, and you work from inside to destroy it. I like the story. Because you see, whenever there is a divided community, it cannot stand. People fight. There is no common goal. And the common goal becomes fighting. And when fighting becomes a common goal, the house can stand. If you can imagine, in a family, the wife has a budget, and the husband has a budget, and the children has a budget. Do you really believe that this house can ever survive? Think it will? Financially? Nope. Move down. Number three. Nations and towns are locked into the needs of the time. They never look ahead to the future. I was told by the British historian is called Toynbee.
Yes.
Arnold Toynbee. He's a great guy.
Toynbee, yes.
He's the one who really shocked us. I was told by a group of people, as Toynbee said the same thing. You know, Toynbee said, the only reason for the advancement of Europe is Judeo-Christian principles. Because Judaism and Christianity are always looking ahead. And why Islam is in the backward area? Because Islam is looking only to the past and the present. It does not look at the future. And he said, for the Jews, the future is the coming of the Messiah. For the Christians, it's the second coming for glory. And so, the future enters into their awareness. And that makes them aware that there is something beyond the present. So, ancient civilizations that are locked into the past and the present actually dug their own grave. They talk about ISIS. Okay? It frightens all of us. I keep saying to people, ISIS is a frightening thing, of course it is, but it will wipe itself. They have no future. Look, I was watching a Syrian writer on an Arab TV. And he was asked the question, what's the future of Islamic civilization? And he said, Islamic civilization? What is that? Everything in our society comes from the West. We are parasites. We are living at the expense of the European-American culture. And he said, if you take everything Western, lift it up from any Arab city, there will be two things left, the mosque and the grocery. I said, even the grocery, you will have things that, you know, that canned food, you know, is made in by a Western way. And he said, in the next 50 years, there will be no Arabs. It will be an extinct race. Why? Because they are parasites. They have done nothing for the future. And you know, when I was in Egypt, every time they cursed America, I kept saying, funny, the paper of the newspaper is imported from the USA. You import paper of the newspaper from the USA in order to curse Americans. It's not only arms, it's medicine, agriculture, just name it. What's the contribution for the future? A city will kill itself because it's living in the past and a little bit drag something from the past to the present. It will die. If you and me live in the past and drag something from the past to our present, we die, mentally die. Biologically, you are alive. You eat, you drive, you go, and but you know, what's your vitality? We cannot be locked into the past and live in the past. We have to look at the future. So when Capernaum disappeared, as it disappeared, you know, I kept saying, well, there were people who really lived in the past. Because you see, to refuse Christ is to refuse the future. It seems a theological issue. It is, but it's also a cultural issue. What can Christ do to us? Nothing. Any questions? No questions?
Point two?
Divided
community.
No common goal cannot stand.
You know, they are divided and they are united in fighting, but having no common goal. Oh, it will, but it's a matter of time, you know. It creates fear and discomfort and unrest and shock and all, but you know, gradually, it will consume itself.
Yeah.
You know?
But it can destroy so much.
Oh, it will, but you see, you know, Toynbee said, the Nazis were bound to be defeated without war, actually. Because they controlled a huge area they could not even administer. You know, that the inner unrest was enough to destroy everything. But you see, we are not talking of a year or two or three. We're talking of a fermentation. Very, very slow, but the end is very well known. It's an end. But you know, we human beings are very often impatient.
Yeah.
We want things to happen just now. Sorry.
But the debate tonight will change all that, right?
What debate?
That's why I love this guy. Who are the cults? What debate?
What debate?
Race in town? You know, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
By the way, I heard the both sides on the TV. I wept for USA. Are these the future leaders of USA?
Well, isn't that a concern? We are importing more things than we are creating.
Well, that is how we destroy American economy. I mean, any fool can say that. I mean, there is a power of destruction working from within. Because there are people greedy and they want to fill their pockets with dollars. And I don't.
Is the recorder still on? Did you turn it on?
It's on, yes.
Turn it off.
turn it off.